Illinois Wesleyan University students will be getting a lesson in the nature of truth in a so-called era of alternative facts. Best-selling author and publisher of Skeptic magazine, Michael Shermer, is speaking during IWU's President's Convocation next week. That'll be September 4th. Shermer tells WGLT's Eric Stock, skepticism is a virtue we all should have, since much of what we believe turns out to be wrong.
You know, I want to encourage the faculty and students to be positive about the role of the academy in proffering tools for thinking critically about all kinds of claims, especially, you know, those coming from the commander in chief. I'm not going to be political at all in my talk. I'm not anti-Trump, pro-Trump, or anything like that in my talk. I'm just saying that it's encouraging that, for example, the rise of fact-checking sites like PolitiFact, for example, have, you know, found a niche since the 2016 election and have really become quite prominent. Other sites like Snopes or our own skeptic.com site, you know, people really do want to know what are the real facts. And they're not willing to accept alternative facts and fake news. So I think it's a positive message.
You are the founding publisher of Skeptic magazine. How do you define a skeptic?
Well, skepticism is just science. It's just the scientific way of analyzing claims. So we start with the null hypothesis that a claim is not true until proven otherwise. You have to have evidence. You have to have arguments. And if you don't, it's okay to just dismiss your claims. And so the burden of proof is on the person making the claim. So skepticism is really just the scientific way of thinking about any claim that anybody makes. And that could go from climate change to vaccines, to political claims about foreign relations or treaties or, you know, whatever.
Well, I get the sense from you that there is, in some corners of the world, there's not enough skepticism in our culture, and maybe there's too much cynicism in our culture at the same time.
Yeah, it's an unfortunate word for some reason. As long as I've been in the business, people seem to conflate skepticism and cynicism. They're not at all related. Again, skepticism is it's not a thing. It's just a tool like reason that we use to analyze claims and try to understand the world and what's true about it. Cynicism is definitely a strong position that's, you know, rather negatively valenced about worldviews or claims that are made. And we're not like that. We don't have a dog in the fight in terms of, like, we're always going to be skeptical or we're never going to be skeptical or anything like that. The moment you do that, then you're not really employing the rules of reason. So it very much matters that you have an open mind, but not so open that your brains fall out and you believe everything. There's some balance to be found there.
You referenced alternative facts, which I believe Kellyanne Conway had first coined while working for the White House. How much of this is attributed to this concept that there are, you know, two sides to every coin? Some believe vaccines are bad for you, that climate change is fake, and in some circles, we, even in the news media, are somehow expected to balance those two things.
Yes, it's sometimes it's disturbing when there aren't really two symmetrical sides. Like on climate change or vaccines, you know, it's 99.99% of scientists agree on one particular conclusion. Of course, you can always find somebody that says, you know, climate change is a hoax or vaccines cause autism, despite the overwhelming facts. And so the news media should not feel the necessity to give both sides equal treatment when there aren't really two equal balanced sides. I mean, there's other issues where, you know, it's not super clear, like on diet and nutrition. You know, should you eat eggs or not? Should you go vegan or should you eat meat? You know, those are not settled issues, and there it's okay to have scientists on both sides. But climate change, you know, when 99% of climate scientists say it's real and human caused, you know, I think the media has an obligation to say, well, this is what the consensus is. And it's not a democracy. It's not like scientists vote about how they feel about climate.
And as we continue on Sound Ideas, I'm Eric Stogg with Michael Shermer, a best-selling author and founding publisher of Skeptic Magazine. He is the featured speaker during Illinois Wesleyan's President's Convocation on September 4th. And on the flip side of cynicism is gullibility. Why are we so gullible? And you have explained that in some sense we are hardwired that way?
Yes, in a way, the default position is just believe whatever you hear. And then skepticism or doubting that thing that you just heard requires an extra cognitive step. That is to say, in order to doubt something, you have to know what the something is. And in the process of trying to understand that something, the brain tends to just believe it. And so it's an extra cognitive load to be skeptical. And that's why we have a free press. That's why we have science. And that's why we have the academy, hopefully, to teach students that, you know, just try to override that propensity to believe everything authorities say. Because often the authorities are in conflict with each other. And so you need to know how to think it through yourself.
But you've also explained, I've heard in past interviews, you've talked about why the brain sometimes seeks oversimplified solutions, you know, looking past the complexity and looking for easy answers. Why is that?
Well, complexity, again, is a higher cognitive load, which is tiresome and burdensome to grind through and think about. It's easier if there's just a single cause behind it. Like, you know, the economy is incredibly difficult to understand. I don't think anyone really understands it, even professional economists. So it's just easier to believe that, you know, there's 12 people in London called the Illuminati and they're running the show, or the New World Order, or Rockefellers, or the Rothschilds, or, you know, whatever your preferred New World Order conspiracy is. It simplifies things, and it means you don't have to think about it so much. It's in a way what labels do. You know, you're a Democrat, you're a Republican, you're a conservative, you're a liberal. Oh, good. Now I don't have to think about your positions anymore. I already know what you think. And that's unfortunate. I mean, we, you know, cognitively we need shortcuts because you can't process everything. So, you know, linguistic shortcuts in the form of labels help. But they can also, be misdirecting because they lead you to just draw certain conclusions about things that may or may not be true.
Now, I've heard that everyone has at least one conspiracy theory. Now, some may have more than others. Have you found that to be the case?
Well, that's true. And actually, that's good, because in the case of conspiracy theories, some of them are true. There, you know, historically speaking, there have been a lot of conspiracies. If we just find conspiracies or two or more people plotting in secret to gain an illegal or immoral advantage over somebody else or to harm somebody else, this happens all the time. I mean, the plot to assassinate Julius Caesar, that was a conspiracy. The assassination of Lincoln, that was a conspiracy. Watergate, Iran-Contra, these are all real conspiracies. We know corporations conspire, for example, tobacco industry, conspire to keep secret the connection between cigarette smoking and cancer.
I guess I should say unproven conspiracy theories.
Yes, okay, so there's the rub. Which conspiracy theories are true and which are false? So there we need to employ what I call my conspiracy detection kit, which I have, you know, a series of questions you could ask about any conspiratorial claim to see if it's true or not. And, you know, this has to do with how many people have to be involved, how competent they have to be, how many elements have to come together in just the right way, who else would know about it, what else would be true if that conspiracy was true. And so I just take the most recent one of, you know, Jeffrey Epstein's suicide. You know, of course, everybody's going crazy about this. And even my own friends think I'm crazy to accept the suicide explanation. Well, okay, so let's say, you know, the Clinton body count, you know, it's part of the Clinton have lots of people murdered. Okay, how is that going to happen? Who orchestrated this? How did they get into the jail with cameras in the corridors? You know, how did they get past the guards and so on? You know, the moment you start kind of putting together all the things that would have to happen, you realize that it's very unlikely to be true. So everyone has their own preferred conspiracy in this sense, that the conspiracies we embrace tend to be those that are on our political side. So people that are in political power tend to be less conspiratorially minded than those out of power. So when Bush 43 was in office, you know, the 9/11 truthers were mostly on the liberal side. Then once Obama took office, the truthers kind of disappeared and the birthers arose, those who think, you know, that Obama faked his birth certificate and so on. Those tended to be Republicans. So often conspiracy theories are linked to politics and religion or race or, you know, belief systems.
And as we continue on Sound Ideas, I'm Eric Stogg with Michael Shermer, a best-selling author and founding publisher of Skeptic Magazine. He is the featured speaker during Illinois Wesleyan's President's Convocation on September 4th. Michael, as you prepare to speak to college students, this seems appropriate to ask. You wrote last year about a study which indicates students in this internet generation, or iGen, those born after 1995 to the mid-2000s, have a greater likelihood of psychological disorders, including depression, and the rates have increased dramatically over the last decade. And it says use of digital media plays a major factor in determining mental well-being. Now, we know the terms fear of missing out, fear of being left out, but you believe it's deeper than that. How does our culture magnify the divisions that social media often creates or at least worsens?
Yeah, those things are true, although since I've written that, there's been two studies that have challenged the social media hypothesis for the increase in depression. Now, the numbers are real. That is to say, kids born after 1995, iGeners, do have significantly higher rates of depression, suicidal ideation, anxiety disorders, and about three times more women than men. Those facts are true. The question is why. And so there's a couple hypotheses. The social media hypothesis was strong for a while, and women use more social media than men, so the fear of being left out and so on. But there's two studies now claiming that's not the case. So a second hypothesis is the coddling of iGeners, that is, we baby boomer and millennial parents during the late 80s and early 90s crime wave, before the crime decline of the mid to late 90s, became helicopter parents, afraid of anything and everything that could happen. That plus the safetyism culture, where lawyers basically directed playgrounds to make them perfectly safe places, and everything down to dodgeball was too dangerous. And that kind of safetyism culture and a hyper parenting culture, helicopter parenting, that's the new hypothesis. That remains to be seen if that'll hold up. This is a good example of how science works. It's what we call conjecture and refutation. You put a hypothesis out there and you test it and you see if it holds. If it doesn't, you try something else. And so this is still new. It's hard to say what the cause of this increase is, and hopefully we can turn it around.
That was author Michael Shermer with WGLT's Eric Stogg. Shermer has appeared on a number of TV programs, including 2020, Dateline, Oprah, Unsolved Mysteries, and The Colbert Report, just to name a few.